Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 193 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by co-host Steve. We're going to recap this week's nerd news. We're going to begin in a short entertainment section talking about the upcoming movie, The Batman, Elden Ring, and some Bioshock adaptation. And then we're going to roll over into tech, where there's some big international news going on this week with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And there's a lot of tech that overlaps as far as the response, the global response to it. So we'll talk a great deal about that. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, and we're here with episode 193, and this is definitely a heavy week for news in general, with the big Russian invasion of Ukraine. A lot to kind of get to as we go there, but we can start on the lighter side today.
Yeah, I'm excited. Batman finally comes out on Thursday. Well, I have tickets for Thursday. Technically, it came out last night. I think a lot of people had Monday or Tuesday tickets. They had some early showings. I slept on that email and wasn't able to get them. Like, I would have really enjoyed going last night or tonight. I can't remember which day it was, but I did get them for Thursday, so I'll be going. And the early reviews are pretty high. I want to say IGN gave it a 10. A lot of people are saying that it's really well done. I have my skepticism.
I was going to say that, like, I don't know, you know, this is very early, like, critic level, and, you know, critics are saying that this is a, for the most part, what I've seen is that people are just saying it's a great movie, you know, outside of comic book movie and stuff like that. It's just a great movie. That sometimes sets the bar way too high, and the critics have a completely different standard than the comic book readers and, you know, the comic fans going into these.
Yeah, I've heard it being described as a villain origin story, not a, like, Batman origin story, which I'm kind of hoping is true. Like, that'd be a good take on rebooting a Batman franchise. Like, I mean, how many fucking times could I see Martha's pearls rolling down a fucking alley? You know, like, Jesus Christ. Like, we get it, bro. We get it. He's got no parents.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been talking about this movie for 2 years. And
I know
when they first announced the cast list for this movie, and how deep the cast list was on the villain side. You know, you've got, you know, the Penguin cast, you got Scarecrow cast, you've got, you know, pretty much everybody but Joker. But even down to the fact that you have what's the mobster's name? Falcone. Cast with all of these characters. We really talked about, like, it kind of makes sense if they are building this into, like, a multiple movie thing, just kind of introducing all of these villains, introducing kind of the state of Gotham, that it's completely overran by all these different segments of different villains, really kind of painting that picture. Obviously, the main fight's going to be Riddler in this one, but building out all of these villains and building out, like, why Gotham is this hellhole. And maybe that's the direction they go. Maybe that's what's going to make it just different.
I agree. Like, I really hope that they do something different. Like I said, you there's certain things that have been done a bunch of times. I don't need to see Batman's origin. I don't need to see Superman crash land on Earth. I don't need to see a lot of things, especially these franchises that have been redone over and over and over again. Like, save me the fucking half hour of my goddamn life, and let's get to the juicy shit. Like, let's go. So I'm really hoping that they just kind of hit the ground running.
You're still
going to
see a dead Martha.
Well, give it to me in like a montage in the credits.
It's either going to happen in a montage, or they're going to give you like the cliched, like, nightmare that he's going to have happen in bed, and he's going to wake up from his dream of remembering that when she died. Like, that's the cliche that I think they'll pull the trigger on.
The only way I'll be excited with a Martha dying is if Joaquin pops that bitch in the head. That's the only way
That's not how she died in his movie.
That's the only way I'm super pumped about it. It's the only way I'm super pumped. I want to see a dirty faced, hooded, shadowy Joaquin. Like, you'll know it's him. Like, they don't have to, like, it doesn't have to be full face, but, like, you'd be like, I think that was Joaquin. I think that was dude.
No, I think I'm gonna be able to go out and see the movie this week. I still don't have a good landscape of the theaters. Definitely didn't book any early tickets out here with the theater. So I think I'm going to be able to get to it this weekend. That's the goal, at least.
Yeah, that'll be first thing we talk about next week is this Batman review. So let's get it.
All right. Well, we can go from there to, I guess, something that you can discuss and review. Picked up a new game, huh?
Yeah. After the hype of Elden Ring, like, I'm not really, I never played any of the Souls games. Like, I'm not like really into that kind of thing. I do love a good RPG. And after every goddamn reviewer gave it like a 10 out of 10, it had like a 9.9999 average rating.
You know? Really?
like out of like 100 and something ratings, like everybody like loved this game. I was like, all right, I got $60. Here you go. Like, let's do it. You know, a couple buddies bought it. This game is fucking hard.
Oh, really?
Bro, I've never played a game so fucking hard in my entire life. Like, and I understand, like, people said, like, yeah, no, the Souls games are hard. Like, this is like, and you think, like, okay, like, might die at a boss, or, you know, it might take me a good 15, 20 minutes to get through a boss fight. Like, man, like NPCs, like, and when you die, it's just like the whole fucking start over kind of shit, and like you lose all like the runes you've been collecting. So like, in order to get, like, you got like 10,000 runes, right? You die, you start with zero. You got to go all the way back to where you died to get your runes. And if you died in the middle of like a village with all these bad guys, yeah, them runes are gone, bro. them runes are gone, bro. You know, it was a little frustrating at first because one of the things that sold me on it is that it was online co-op, you know, in any game that I, you know, especially RPGs that I could play with my buddies and you know, do some hanging out because, you know, I'm an adult and I don't ever get to go out. I really gravitate towards those. And the first few days, so many people bought this game that the servers were full. Like, you just couldn't get on the network at all to play the multiplayer.
Really?
Yeah, it was just jam fucking packed for, I think last night was the first time I was able to actually log into the server to even try to play a multiplayer game. And then, like, it's a really weird, like, system. It's not like true online co-op to where you can send a game invite to your friend, you load up in the lobby, you go into the world together, and then you play. Like, it's like, no, you start solo, go into the world, you get to like a section of the land where there's like a boss, and then you write some crazy shit on the ground with a spell, and that like allows,
summons your friend.
Yeah, it's like allows people, you know, either randos or specific friends to like see that thing on the ground. So they got to go to where you're at to find the thing you wrote on the ground. And it's like, hey, your buddy keeps dying. Like, help this dude out. And fucking, then they can click that and you could click something and then they port that guy in. And then you can go kill the boss. And the minute the boss is dead, it's like, all right, peace out. Get out of here. Let this kid play.
Like, so yeah, it's kind of bogus.
It's this weird kind of like, yeah, online co-op kind of thing. I mean, I'm still glad it's there because I like, fuck these fucking things, bro. it is so fucking hard. But visually, the game is stunning. Like, the mechanics are a little hard to get used to, but I think it's just because I haven't played this style game, you know, so I'm still trying to get the timings down of the dodges and stuff. But after all the great reviews, like, I know there's mad people that bought it like me because of the reviews and played it for 2 hours and was like, fuck this. And will never play that game ever again. And it's really weird because there's no quests. There's no like rails whatsoever to guide you to do anything. You wake up, you walk out of this church, and the world's there ready to fucking murk you, and it's like, go do something, kid. Like, go do something, go figure it out. And like you get to the game, you're like, all right, let's go, where's the first exclamation point? Like, where's my first quest? And then you just run out to this dude on a horse that is like the hardest fucking thing that you've ever seen initially in a video game, and it's runs you over right there, boom. Like, I must have died from this knight on the giant fucking knight on the horse. And like, anybody that's played this game knows this dude, because you literally walk out the door and he's like staring at you, and it's like, how do I not have to fight this fucking dude? And like, old school video game logic just tells you, hey, I got to kill that guy, right?
Yeah.
like old school video game logic.
I got to kill this guy or this guy's going to teach me how to play. One of the two is going to happen
here. One of the two. You know, you see a hallway and on a map, you go down the hallway. It could either be the next level or it could be a chest. Like there's certain video game mechanics over the last 30 years that have led me to believe that I'm supposed to go fight this dude. Nah, you don't fight that dude. Like, you better not fight that dude. That dude's going to fucking kill you all night. So I'm determined myself to not give up on it. Like, no, you're going to keep playing this and you're going to fucking figure it out. You're going to see what everybody is talking about, why this game is so good. So I'm going to stay at it. You know, anybody in the Cantina group, drop some comments in the group and let us know your tricks. I already got a couple buddies sending me some like YouTube farming tutorials so you could level up your guy really fast and stuff like that. And it's like, I haven't needed a YouTube tutorial to get past the first level since like I was like nine, like since Nintendo Power, you know, like what the fuck?
Well, everything you've said has convinced me that this is yet another game that I will never even try to play.
Oh yeah, you ain't got no time for that, homie. You ain't got no time for that. You need to sit your ass down and watch Peacemaker. Fuck that game.
Yeah, this is definitely not something I'm going to do. So I appreciate your review. Let's move on. We got a little more in some video game news we could talk about here. And we've got apparently BioShock is coming to Netflix. So that's about it. That's the story. That's pretty much you get. Yeah.
It's a thing. We confirm it's a thing.
So obviously BioShock is, you know, it's at this point a pretty classic storytelling video game with a very kind of rich backstory and environment that they created and everything else. I don't know how they're going to adapt it to a Netflix show. It's going to probably be kind of interesting. It doesn't even say if it's animated. It doesn't say anything about it other than the fact that Netflix tweeted out and confirmed that they are adapting BioShock into a movie. So we'll find out more as it comes. No.
Well, that one's been around for a long time. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I bought it. It's one of the many games that I bought that I never played.
Yeah, I own all three, and like, sadly, as a big, grown, tattooed man, I don't like scurry games. That is not the feeling I want when I'm relaxing on my couch, high as hell, you know, looking for some gaming time. Like, them scary games, man, they be fucking with me. Like, I jump, I throw shit. I haven't really gotten into that one. I've tried to play it a few times. And I'm like, man, this dark hallway, someone's going to jump out at me. And the first time I, like, jump and drop my controller, yeah, I'm out. I'm out.
Yeah, I don't really know much about it other than the fact that I just know that it's got such a huge fan base. You know, it's really kind of revered as a great story.
Yeah, visually it was great. Like the whole opening part of the game where you go underwater and it's this big ass fucking city. Like I have very great interest in playing the game. Like I hope they make this TV show and they just follow the video game storyline. And it's like, all right, just take me straight to the cutscene. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll share any more information that comes out as far as when we can expect it, what type of movie. I'm sure they'll come out with some casting information and stuff here soon, but all we know now is it's coming. And last little bit, we'll kind of kick this into still our video game entertainment section or whatever else, but we got some breaking news coming out of PC Gamer as they wrote an article this week talking about how 50% of all transactions from Bitcoin were fraudulent when Steam was accepting Bitcoin as payments. And I had to look at it.
Yeah, you read that. You think like, oh, man, like this had to have been last week. Like,
yeah, I had to look at the article. I had to put it on our outline and say, oh, wow, this is an interesting take. Let's see. Man, this is just a straight like hit piece from people who don't like crypto, who just wanted to put this headline out there. So all of the data that they're talking about comes from 2016 to 2017 when Steam accepted Bitcoin, and saying like it doesn't even give any clarity as to in what way they were fraudulent. Like that's what I really was hoping you'd come out of this with, is like, how did you make fraudulent transactions with Bitcoin? Like that doesn't doesn't actually make sense. Like a transaction either happens or it doesn't. Like you can't fraud that. It's not I don't,
there's no counterfeit Bitcoins right now.
Yeah, so I didn't understand, and I tried to dig into it, and it in no way talks about it. In no way states it. It just says that it's pretty much like an opinion from Gabe Newell, who, you know, is behind Steam, and said that this is like his anecdotal thing stating it, and how Gabe Newell doesn't like Bitcoin, and how there really isn't a need for the ledger, that people want this ledger that they don't even need, and Bitcoin's a scam, essentially. So,
okay,
not news.
Boomer. Yeah, so, okay, boomer.
Not news. We like to sometimes bring you not news here, as just an example of PC gamer and the video game industry just still really being anti-crypto. When you look at the traditional video game space and the reaction that people had to NFTs, the reaction that they have to crypto payments over at Steam and stuff like that, there's still a lot of pushback against this kind of Web3 movement in traditional video games. All right, let's move into the bigger news of the week. And we can talk about, it's been kind of in the news for the last several weeks, months really, as people talk about whether Russia was going to invade Ukraine or whether it was ever going to happen, whether Russia was just going to make a small little invasion into that easternmost region, the Donbas region, and try to take the section that was contested by Russian separatists. And in the end, Russia made a full move, full invasion into Ukraine.
Yeah. I was more amazed that this was the first time that U.S. intelligence had a, like, I told you so moment in a long time. I can't remember the last time U.S. intelligence was just like dead on when everybody was like, nah, bro, like, nah, it's all good. I mean, the president of Ukraine was telling everybody to like calm down. Things are going okay. Like, it's not going to get to that point.
Well, President Biden was like, no, we've got intelligence. He's attacking. He is absolutely going to attack. And I really thought it was just like, oh, this is just posturing. This is just,
Just trying to. And honestly, with the history of the United States, why would you believe?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's just a really messed up situation. Score one for you, U.S. intelligence. Cause I mean, the only downside, well, not the only downside of this war, but like one of the downsides of them being right is like now they're just going to double down on all the bullshit that they feed us for the next 5-10 years. Like, hey, remember we were right about Ukraine? Put those masks back on. it's all going to be coming.
Yeah. So in the end, you know, it's obviously a major action and war on Ukraine. And, you know, we're not going to talk so much about geopolitics here, but what we can talk about is the effect that this had in the tech space and a lot of emerging technologies, a lot of things that we talk about regularly, and how they've played into this conflict here in the early days. So first story that we can talk about is a company that we talk about a lot, and we've got Elon Musk with Starlink, who in the very early days we start to see significant cyber attacks leading up to the invasion, and then throughout the invasion, you've got cyber attacks coming from Russia into Ukraine. A lot of like DDoS attacks, just to completely shut down services, shut down their news agencies, completely kind of cut people off of communication and access to the internet, access to state-run websites and things. So then in comes Elon, who activates and moves Starlink satellites over Ukraine. To state that he was going to give Ukraine a data backup option that was outside of kind of the landline systems that Russia was already infiltrating and attacking.
Yeah, it initially started because I think one of the prime ministers tweeted at Elon, like, well, I don't know the exact quote, but he quoted something like, while you plan on landing on Mars, we have Russians landing in Ukraine. While you are landing rockets on ships, we have rockets landing in our country. You know, and to Elon's credit, he responded to that tweet like, hey, just fired up Starlink in the Ukraine. We're going to send over some terminals. And within 48 hours of him tweeting that, terminals started landing in Ukraine, giving them some backup to their internet access. I mean, you figure it's strategic war, common war strategy now to cut off the lines of communication, and internet being the most modern form of communication, you know, was no different back then when they cut the telegraph lines and, you know, bombed all that kind of stuff. So to have a system where, you know, all these satellites are up that can give them an internet base that isn't, you know, can't be infiltrated really. Good for him.
Yeah. And it's, Yeah, it's one of the major stories that we talk about with Starlink and what they're doing is having this global broadband access private company taking on this venture. This only happens through, right, a private company that can launch thousands of satellites into low Earth orbit and do this. It's going to be capable of delivering internet into challenged, war-stricken countries. It's also going to be the internet company that's going to go and fly significant satellites over the next place that's ravaged by a hurricane or a natural disaster and stuff like that. Yeah. Like this capability, it just proves the capability of them to serve people worldwide, just about anywhere in the world they can get these satellites overhead. They're still going to run into the terminal issues for now, but somewhere in the future, when you look at like the long range vision of Starlink, these terminals are going to be cheaper, they're going to be smaller, and all these countries are going to have access to the terminals. So that's just a matter of him just maintaining and keeping the infrastructure alive in these countries that are, whether again they're affected by war, they're affected by natural disaster, whatever it happens to be, but providing them that broadband access that's critical towards support.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the resilience of the Ukrainian citizens. This should help them out greatly, even just in communication to families. And, you know, as a lot of them become refugees in Poland and things like that, and the men are staying behind to fight, it might be, these terminals might be able to just at least send I'm safe email. Like it's greatly important for this to go on. I mean, can you imagine if we had some crazy Red Dawn situation in Russia, just like killed the internet in the United States? Like, do you realize the mayhem that would fucking happen if people couldn't fucking load their TikToks and fucking binge watch their fucking streams and shit? Like man, it would be fucking insane, so it's good, internet has become an extension of our lives. It's not just it's truly a utility. We talk about that all the time when we talk about how we should provide access to internet to some of our less fortunate citizens in this country. That it's not a luxury. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, yeah, internet was something that only people with a fucking modem could afford, but now it truly, I believe, is a utility, and it's good to see systems like this able to keep the lights on, per se. Yeah.
Well, more on that concept of the key infrastructure and utility of the internet here. We've got the next article is coming out where, Ukraine at the onset of this and just kind of the power, and it just shows the cyber capabilities of Russia in general. Nobody knew Ukraine has spent years preparing for cyber attacks from Russia. Like they've known that this is a threat that is out there specifically against them for a long time. But still, they were heavily affected by cyber attack from Russia. And they even made public addresses and public calls for a private IT army that they were requesting through Telegram, and just stating that anybody who has cyber skills or capability who's willing to continue and support them in the fight, that they've got jobs and tasks for everybody, that they were fighting off so many different attacks and so many different areas that they just needed more and more people in order to push back the Russian cyber attacks.
Yeah, if you're a global hacker outside of Russia or outside of China, well, I mean, I guess I would wonder what the percentage of hackers are that are actually in Russia and China. So you're talking about maybe half, but like the other half of hackers that are global, if you ain't trying to hack Russian websites to put like gay porn on the Kremlin fucking webpage, what the fuck are you doing with your life, man? Like, quit trying to scam these old ladies and try to steal people's Bitcoin for like a week. Give us a week, man. And like, go after these dudes. Like, hit, like, let the, it's a really good way to let Russia or China know that like the world isn't going to just stand for this kind of shit. Like, it's really hard. Sometimes as like a common citizen, you feel like you're yelling into the vacuum. Yeah, your Facebook post really didn't do shit. Your conversations with your friends aren't really, like we need to be able to show support for Ukraine, give the Ukrainian army some morale. And I think one of the best ways to do that would be to just hack the fucking shit out of every Russian entity that you possibly can.
Yeah, and some of that did take place. So
yeah, I know Anonymous has been going at it.
I was going to say, yeah, I didn't share articles on our outline, but I've read a couple where Anonymous has claimed credit for several different attacks, one of which I know that they hacked into Russian news and they were able to take control over Russian news stations. And instead of taking your advice and just playing porn across it, what they did was they showed gay porn. What they did was they showed actual Ukrainian footage and news to show the public, because one of Russians' tactics is they didn't tell their public what they were doing. So the Russian public really didn't know, because there's a lot of parents of young soldiers really upset right now in Russia. So they actually just showed actual Ukrainian news, tried to show live footage and events that were taking place in Ukraine to illuminate the people and provide them some news.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. That's probably a better idea, but I'm still going to side with deepfake Putin gay porn. I'm still going to side with some butchy ass deepfake Putin gay porn, man. I think that would really, really put a hurting on dude right now. That is actually really good that they're showing the Russian people, because I mean, when we say Russia, it's hard to separate good Russian citizens that want no part in this, that can't speak up about it, they can't denounce it, they can't say shit. The first time they go on a news thing or is like, you know, why is Putin sending my son to die for no reason? You're straight to the fucking gulag, pal. you're straight to the fucking gulag. Shut the fuck up, Sergey. Just stay down. Keep your head down. We're going to try to help you out. Like, don't dig yourself a fucking hole. So yeah, I just to give the parents of these soldiers that don't know what the fuck they're doing over there, that don't want to be over there, that really, you know, I don't know, man, this is really fucked. This is a sad, sad state we're in the world.
And, you know, it just shows, again, the role that cyber is going to play in major conflict. This is a large conflict. This is a big deal that's taking place. And you can imagine if this scales to a larger conflict, right? Whether it was a conflict between us and any other nation, pick one, Russia, China.
You're one major fuck up from this being getting really fucking out of hand. Like, I mean, you had Germany give a bunch of missiles, you know, and the threats that Putin's putting out there for anybody that gives any kind of aid to Ukraine. Like, he's just telling the rest of the world, hey, stay the fuck out of it, because if not, fuck you too. I got my next eye pointed at you. Like, this is some crazy world stage, you know, fucking small man syndrome bully shit.
Yeah, and like I said, cyber's going to play a big role in it. So this is hopefully this. I you've got to think that our country is always taking cybersecurity somewhat seriously, right?
We hope every fucking week we do a story where we hope that
we always hope that that's the case. And you know, just seeing what's unfolding in Ukraine, and to their networks, to their infrastructure and stuff like that, you got to really hope even harder now, that we're less vulnerable and taking the measures necessary to avoid this if we became, you know, the target of somebody's cyber army.
Yeah. I pray every day that we have taken the proper steps to avoid some of the shit that we're seeing go down. I have little faith. I have some faith, you know, that the right people have been put in place to protect us from this. But I mean, I hope we don't have to test it out, honestly. Like, I hope it never gets to the point where we really need to see where we're at in it.
All right.
This next story, I'm very proud to say that I kind of called this before this article even came out. My brain was down this track in train as soon as I started hearing about how the world will handle Russian finances.
All right, so you know, what we've got is Ukraine making requests initially to freeze Russian accounts in certain crypto exchanges. So essentially to prevent Russians access to any crypto that they have, conduct any trades, move any money just freeze out their exchange accounts altogether. So Ukraine originally made requests specifically to Kraken, who was one of the major ones that that is used pretty globally. The Kraken CEO and Kraken responded and said, no, we're not going to act on your request, that you're going to have to make this like an actual legal demand in order for us to take any action or shut anybody down. And even then, the Kraken CEO intended on fighting any legal claims to restrict access.
I mean, they're in a tough position. Like, it's not as easily as just tracking social security numbers on bank accounts and stuff, you know?
It's not. And this, I think, opens up a really great debate in the crypto space on what is the rights of these exchanges, or what are the requirements of these exchanges to do this. Got it. Russia bad, right? There's a pretty strong consensus everywhere outside of Russia, and even a lot in Russia, that Russia is the bad guy here, right? that any penalties, any constraints, restrictions go to Russia. At the same point, part of the whole concept of cryptocurrency is the decentralization of finance, is to untether it from government, have a global marketplace and a global currency that the market controls itself, and being a tool to punish another country financially defeats that whole concept. It actually breaks up that entire concept.
Yeah, this is like a tough position. You know, I've long stood with the stance that, especially with American freedom and stuff, we can't infringe on freedoms just to go after bad people. We've had this kind of like debate when we talk about reading people's messages, and they always use child pornography or child trafficking as a reason to hack all your shit. And we say flat out, like, no, you don't get to hack my shit in the name of like this horrible thing that we all agree is horrible, but I still shouldn't have to give up my freedoms. This is kind of like that same premise. Like, we almost have to be okay with a certain level of nefarious activity to be conducted in order to secure the overall, you know, positive aspects of it. Like, you can't, like, nothing's ever going to be perfect. There's never going to be a flawless system. And at some point, we have to be okay with the downside of it, because the benefits greatly outweigh the negatives. I mean, when they first started talking about taking Russian banks off of the European network and seizing a lot of bank accounts, you know, we have a group where we talk about cryptos and stocks and how the market affects. That was one of the first things I said in there. I said, you know, it might be a good time to buy some Bitcoin, because I see Russian oligarchs, the only way they can secure their billions and make sure the world doesn't just, you know, fuck them. Like, if you're a Russian oligarchy, you got a billion, some German bank, you better move that shit to fucking Bitcoin right now.
Yeah. And like, I mean, we didn't really see that fully play out as far as like a major spike in movement in Bitcoin or whatever else. We actually saw it to the negative at the beginning of it. It's kind of settled out and improved a little bit. But yeah, no, it fully makes sense that you would think, not even if you were just Russian, if you were Ukrainian, right? And just like, if you were anybody in this bubble of conflict, yeah, I would look at trying to move my money in some other places.
I mean, you have some risks of the market taking a dip while you hide your money there and losing some money, but losing a couple percentage points is a lot different than seizing your entire fucking account or freezing your entire fucking account. Like, you know, devil's advocate, like, I'm some Russian piece of shit oligarch. Like, yeah, I put fucking my $5 billion in 10 different crypto tokens and put that shit on a USB strapped to my fucking neck everywhere I go. You know, like, it's the equivalent of like World War II motherfuckers just loading up gold bars in a suitcase and going to Venezuela. Like, yeah. it's no fucking different.
And that's the thing with like even these requests, you know, the concept, you know, that I argued about, what, you know, the ideology of the decentralized nature of cryptocurrency, it still exists, right? If people owned their actual crypto keys, they had it on a hardware wallet or a MetaMask or whatever it happens to be, and they had their keys outside of centralized exchanges, then there's nothing any government can do really to stop them. they just wouldn't be able to put it back into a centralized exchange that has to deal with government regulation, government requests, and all of that. So, you know, Kraken being a global centralized exchange system that people, you know, use, that wouldn't be the place maybe to store your money if they fall victim to this. We've also seen, you know, requests and issues with Kraken and decentralized exchanges here in the U.S.
Yeah, we've said multiple times, though, if you own a decent amount of crypto, your shit shouldn't be in an exchange anyways. It should be on a hard wallet. So really, it only needs to be on Kraken for fucking, what, 20 seconds, 30 seconds to transfer to a hard wallet and dip out.
Yeah, so it's, in the end, you know, the main reason why I wanted this article in here is just because it just shows another real challenge of the Web3 space, the crypto space.
Oh, and this is for sure going to be a reason why people say that crypto shouldn't exist. You know, you're gonna have a lot of politicians and a lot of people around the world, especially that have vested interests in traditional banking and the traditional market, to use this as a shut it all the fuck down moment. This is some bullshit. And, you know, honestly, again, you hate to be on the side of protecting the pedophiles when you talk about, you know, encrypted messaging, and you hate to be on the side of the Russian oligarchs when it comes to this. But, like, man, there's a greater purpose that we're talking about here. And we have to keep the focus on the overall picture of the landscape rather than these horrific occasions that, you know, shine a little bit of the negative on it.
Yeah, so we'll see. I think in the end, they're going to probably have to freeze some accounts. They're still against the Kraken CEO and stuff. It's still against like the blanket request that Ukraine had. They're not going to blanketly block all Russian accounts because that's just going to affect Russian citizens who, you know, may or may not be against the war in Ukraine. But ultimately, they all shouldn't necessarily have their assets frozen as just citizens of the country. So we'll see where they go. We'll give updates next week if there are any, if this makes it through some kind of legal challenges and turns into some level of restrictions on Russian accounts. But we can just do one more quick story. I didn't have it here on the outline, but we can just talk about the crypto space coming in support. You know, again, this is a big you know, tech and Ukraine Russian segment here. And the last one is just kind of the positive side of Web3 and Web3's response. And what we see is a bunch of DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, come together, different NFT projects that were put together essentially immediately at the onset of the conflict. A lot of people in the space just sharing their concern and thoughts for Ukraine. And then that's inspired several different DAOs, several different NFT projects that raised millions of dollars in minutes as far as selling these NFTs. One of the NFTs was just a Ukrainian flag. That's all it was. Like there was no promise of some, you know, pump of value that you were going to flip this and make a bunch of money. Nope. There was no art. There was no nothing. It was just Russian flags produced as an NFT. That one specifically with like Russian flags, Ukrainian flags. This is as an NFT. And that one was ran specifically. I don't know if you ever heard of Pussy Riot. She's like musician who was jailed by Russia. She's anti-Putin. She worked with some people to put together that NFT project, raised millions of dollars that went directly into Ukrainian aid. And then there was a couple other ones ran by some significant influencers that did like actual, like a bunch of artists donated pieces of art that they sold through the NFTs, again, sold out in like 30 seconds or 30 minutes, and sold millions of dollars worth of NFTs that went into it. So it just shows kind of the power of the Web3 degen space and kind of a new idea of kind of activism and charitable act.
This is the same kind of thing like, what is it, those Paisy flowers that you put on your rearview mirror when they're taking the donations. You know, you don't do it for the item, you know, like when you put the change in the jar on the side of the road and you get the Tootsie Roll, I really don't often eat the Tootsie Roll. But I'm just glad I did something nice. It's the same thing as like, here's a picture of the Ukraine, you know, keep in your NFT wallet. It reminds you that you did something good for some people. You can use it to virtue signal if you really want. I know some of you are gonna. But it is good to see the community come together. I think a lot of people have some misconceptions about the NFT and crypto community, that it's just a bunch of crypto bros trying to get rich quick, and same thing with, you know, Wall Street, you know, type people trying to get rich quick, that it's just nothing but a bunch of greedy assholes that are out there trying to scam people and things like that. This really highlights that no, there's people behind these keyboards, real life people with real lives that, you know, want to do something good, that are just interested in this new tech and this revolution of art and in finance. And, you know, I'm glad that we can have some good stories like this along with the crypto world.
And it shows the velocity of money that takes place in the Web3 space too. Just, you know, yeah, there's other organizations that can raise money and do these things, but like the cost for Red Cross to go out and run ads and to collect this money and the overhead and the phone banks and the things that they need to do is significant, but they still do good. But in this space, it was a matter of taking an image file, putting it out there on Twitter, and in 30 minutes being able to raise millions of dollars that has almost no overhead. And yep, in a cryptocurrency that costs almost no money to transfer and get it into the hands of the organizations in Ukraine that need the support, it just shows kind of the speed at which cryptocurrency, the Web3 space, kind of how they communicate through Twitter and Discord or whatever else, how fast those decisions and how fast that can be mobilized. So I just found it fascinating. It's really, you know, it's not the only way to give. It's not the only charitable organizations doing it, but it's just a fascinating and kind of a get proof of the power of the degen life and the Twitter space and Web3.
I mean, and that's what you call balanced reporting, folks. Like, we show you the Russian oligarch nightmares of crypto and then the charity end of crypto. Like, this is straight balanced reporting, non-bias.
Yeah, I'm a little biased.
take notes, mainstream media. Take notes.
But, all right. Are we done talking Ukraine and Russia? You want to finish off a couple lighter bullshit stories?
Yeah, bullshit stories at the end. Let's get out of this hole.
All right. Let's talk about one that's pretty hilarious to me.
This fucking dude.
So, what's his name?
I'm seeing it as De'Aaron.
De'Aaron Fox. He's a
NBA. I don't watch basketball.
he's an NBA player for the Sacramento Kings, and I guess he's been in the NFT space for a while. Launched his own project. Launched it in January, mid basketball season. So sold, I think it was like a $1.6 million as far as like what he received in the mint of this NFT project that he did in the middle of the season, and just let it go to hell and really did absolutely nothing with it. Now we're here, we're into March, really built nothing out of this project. And then now he's just deleted it. Like it just doesn't exist anymore.
Like so bogus, man.
It just
so
stated
bogus.
That his timing was poor. That he should not have done this during the season, and, you know, somehow like promised anybody who minted 5 of them would get like a signed jersey from him. But I guess if you minted 1 through 4, just sorry about your luck. I don't know how this works. But, you know,
you're a multimillionaire NBA player. Like, you couldn't just fucking subcontract all the bullshit to keep this fucking thing up and running. Like, just to have your good name.
That's in his defense. That's what he said he did, is that he hired a professional team to manage it, to manage the NFT project and everything else.
Hired a team. Professional might be a little bit of a stretch, you might have hired a team.
This is the problem in the NFT world, right? Like, somebody can come to you and tell you that they're the premier professionals in the NFT space. What's that mean? They've got 6 months experience? Like, in the end, the space is so new, it is hard to vet really who are the true professionals.
I mean, for all we know, he could just looked over and been like, hey, Ray, run this Discord right quick.
He might have.
We don't fucking know. Like, either way, rug pulls are a thing in the NFT world. It's something that a lot of people are afraid of. You really have to buy into these projects on like a good faith basis, because there is no, you know, we're all in this weird space of social contracts that can be broken at any moment. And it's just messed up to see somebody that is in the public eye so much to just be like, yeah, I'm going to take $1.5 million of just regular people's money and dip, because it's not like I got an NBA contract to fall back on or anything like that, you piece of shit.
Yeah, I'm very curious. He states that he's not done in the NFT space, whatever else. You know, maybe he can make it.
Oh, you better be done in NFT space, yeah. Motherfucker. Like,
he knows.
You better not put your name on nothing else.
But all I know is this is an epic rug pull from an NBA player who, man, you got to think that he just needs to stay off of Twitter. Definitely never go into Discord again. Like, you will not digitally survive. So it's just a hilarious story to me of a very famous person committing a rug pull because he just couldn't figure out. And he just went for the cash grab, right? Like NFT pumps, NFT season was happening, and he just wanted to launch one. Didn't really care what was going to be kind of the follow-up with it.
Yeah, this is fucked up.
All right, and then bring up one last story here and a little bit of AI robot stuff and bionic implants. And I read a couple of articles I had one last week that we didn't end up talking about, so let it make this week. And that's that apparently that there's been problems with bionic implants and bionic companies, namely like there was a bionic eye that helped restore people's vision. And the problem is if those companies don't manage their money well and those companies go bankrupt, you don't get firmware updates to that eye anymore.
No. Like, this is some Cory, straight out of Cory Doctorow shit. Like he was calling this in his book a while ago. Like, yeah, if like you better it's really weird because if you are a blind man that needs a robotic eye, you can be picky on who wants to give you a free eye. You know what I'm saying? Like, can you be like, nah, like if it's not made by Google, Amazon, or one of these major companies, I'm sorry, I can't take it because I can't take a risk on seeing the world for a year and then all of a sudden getting a static fucking, you know, TV screen because you motherfuckers went out of business and you know, you won't update the fucking, you know, bugs in my eye. And now I'm getting fucking, you know, IoT fucking hacks on my goddamn eyeball and people are playing fucking novella Spanish shows on my eye all day and I can't get it off.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, this company Second Sight, you know, which made these bionic eyes. I think the article said there was only like 350 people. Most of the people, 349 of them, had the bionic eye put in one eye socket. There was one person who had both of his eye sockets with a bionic eye in it. And like there was mixed reviews, but for the most part, people were able to at least see with those bionic eyes. Like it actually worked to a degree, probably not as good as some people had hoped, but it did give them some vision. But the company has now gone bankrupt, so they're no longer supporting it. So if you have a malfunctioning eye, you have problems in it, like you are absolutely on your own, to just let that thing rot. And, you know, I guess we could all just hope that the richest man in the world, or whatever the hell he is in ranking now, but Elon Musk and like Neuralink, like you gotta, when you put that brain chip into your skull, and then after Elon does it, and that second company comes up and tries to do it too, right? And that discount company is offering you that brain chip.
You
might want to think twice about these things.
No. I am not buying the Kirkland fucking brand eyeball. I'm not doing it. Shout out to Costco.
But I don't know. In the end, it's it's a futurism, interesting kind of concept as these companies are going to become more and more intrusive. But then, yeah, what happens when these companies fail? Well, this is a good example of a cautionary tale.
I just have a vision of somebody going into the ER with a robotic hand with a really tight grip on an appendage that nobody ever wants to happen. I'm just waiting for that story to roll across our desk, boy.
All right. Well, that's a week. That's a week in news that gets us through a little bit of entertainment there. A whole lot of geopolitical tech intersection and little fun stories at the end. But as always,
to anybody with family in Ukraine, anybody that is Ukrainian heritage, anybody that... Yeah, I doubt one of our 50 listeners is in Ukraine, but if you out there, man, I got support for you, man. I really am impressed and proud of the Ukrainian people and them standing up for their homes and fighting for their homes. The stuff that's coming out of that country is inspiring, to say the least. So I really hope they pull it off.
Yeah. Well, as always, let's continue the conversations over at thenerdcantina.com/community. Join us over in our private Facebook group. We'll continue to chat, discuss things that that are important, share news articles, and lots of memes.
And until next week, guys.
Yep.
We'll
talk
see
to you later.
You.